The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started.
Hello, I am your host, Phelan Oliver, and thanks for tuning in with another segment with me. Today we're going to focus on a subject that I found on TikTok, and it is in regards to botanical sexism. The conversation got so big that it moved from TikTok to Twitter as well. So let's just dive right in. The theory is that male park workers or city workers decided to plant more male trees in order to avoid the messiness of female trees. In turn, the male trees are putting out more pollen than necessary to try to compete with other male trees to find a female tree to produce fruit. With all the extra pollen in the air, our allergy season has actually been extended by an extra 20 days, and the theory actually came from an allergy researcher, Tom Ogren. Tom started his allergy-free garden when he realized his wife had lethal seasonal allergies. The theory also claims this is a way to keep fresh fruit out of poor neighborhoods. So they're planting male trees in order to make sure that people in predominantly poor neighborhoods aren't able to access fresh fruit for free. And all of this totally made sense to me when I was thinking about it, because I was like, wow, like, that's crazy. That makes sense because sexism is literally in everything. And then I started doing a little bit more research, and my research led me to this Twitter thread by Dr. Sarah Tabor. And all of my research notes and the Twitter thread will be in show notes. Sarah Tabor is a farm and food system strategist who had a lot to say about this topic. Dr. Tabor believes Tom Ogren is a fake, who is pushing his agenda to get more people to pay for consultations with him for his business. According to Dr. Tabor, there's no such thing as a male or female species when it comes to trees, for the most part. Most tree species have male and female flowers, and every single flower on the tree has both pollen and tree ovaries, for lack of a better term. This is a quote from Dr. Sarah Tabor. Pollen is so cheap that trees can afford to make extra, like a lot extra. So trees have to make clouds of pollen to ensure it'll land on a seed. And that's the reason why we have so much pollen right now in the spring. The other reason city workers might have decided not to plant fruit trees in neighborhoods is because once the fruit is ripe and falls off the tree onto the ground, most people don't normally pick up that fruit to eat it. They pick the fruit from the tree. So once the fruit is sitting on the ground, it becomes rotten. And what happens when you get rotten fruit? You get flies and you get rats. So that is another reason why we don't have fruit trees in a lot of our neighborhoods. What are considered like street trees are the ginkgo trees. And those trees are planted in most neighborhoods. And those are the trees that are more of a male species than a female species, which is what Tabor believes Ogren was actually referring to with his research. Female ginkgo trees produce fruit, but the fruit is very stinky. So people don't really want stinky fruit in their neighborhood anyways, which is why they don't plant those trees. Also, female ginkgo trees don't produce a lot of pollen. So that's another reason why Tabor believes Ogren was referring to that species. Some species that do produce a lot of pollen, pine, maple, oak trees. And if you're looking to plant trees that produce fruit, plant nut trees. They're cleaner, they make more food value, and they're more compatible with human density. So the solution is to start planting the right variety of trees in these neighborhoods to try to reduce the pollen. But also, male trees rarely exist, and pollen is out of control because of climate change. So that's the real conversation that needs to be had, climate change. And of course, we all know climate change is actually real and it's a big deal and it's affecting us in many ways, aka our allergy season. this was all like really interesting news for me, and I had not known any of this, especially the new research that I had found. So I wanted to share this with you all in hopes that you learn something new and maybe plant a nut tree. Thank you again for tuning in with me. If you'd like to follow me, you can follow me at Phalen Oliver on Instagram. It's PHALINOLIVER. And yeah, see you next time.
Hey, 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 and welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast, the show that brings you the best of the best feminist content. I'm your host, Neba from Notes by Neba, and today we're chatting about sugar waxing and body hair. So TikTok has been this hotspot for trends, from fashion to food to beauty and skincare, and one beauty trend that is quite the rage right now is sugar waxing. There's tons of do-it-yourself sugar waxing videos on how to create the wax, how to apply it, and the benefits of sugaring. We'll get into all of that and the recipe in a second, but first, some context. While sugar waxing may seem like a new concept just because it's trending, it's actually been practiced for centuries, like nearly 4,000 years. It originated in Persia and then spread to Egypt, and it was considered the most effective way to remove hair back then. Because hairless smooth skin was the beauty standard back then, just kind of like it still sort of is now, hair removal was super important to the Persians, and it was regularly practiced in ancient Egypt and Greece and Middle Eastern countries. Even Miss Cleopatra herself used sugar wax. Throughout history, a woman's looks are constantly being altered and reshaped and redesigned and rethought for the benefit of the patriarchy and the male gaze. They love it. The patriarchy loves it when women have like childlike features, just no body hair, rosy cheeks, large eyes, that whole vibe. And because like not having any hair kind of imitates the body of a prepubescent girl, it just immediately connects femininity to physical appearance. Like this concept of a hairless body being feminine is intrinsically infantilizing. Body hair, just like periods, is a sign that kind of like shows the distinction between a woman and a girl. And any woman will tell you the most notable physical change that we go through as we get older and enter puberty is the appearance of body hair in areas that we were like previously like naked, you know? So hair development, whether that's like in your underarms or your pubic region or even on your face, is one of the most visible bodily markers that marks this transition into womanhood. So as a result, when society labels a bodily marking as like ugly or anti-feminine, it's sort of, you know, immediately labeling womanhood as ugly, rejecting womanhood in favor of girlhood. And this is all just kind of like this infantilization of women. And that has been and continues to be used to limit women's prospects because it just maintains this like male power structure. And that just continues to control society and continues to control how society functions. And when you think of women being infantilized, it's especially harmful because it feeds into society's like prejudices about women. So that's where we like get more males talking over women or talking down to women, mansplaining, disregarding our voices, et cetera, et cetera. You know, in politics, you'll often see people make fun of a woman politician calling them a girl or telling them, oh, run home to mommy and daddy. And so society may have this pressure to remove body hair, but over the past like couple years, we've seen this rise in a counterculture movement of embracing your body hair. There's some people who dye it to be even bolder and make a statement. I've always thought that was like a really cool fashion accessory, not gonna lie. And I think this all is like a way of empowering yourself and just challenging this rigid beauty standard. And here at Feminist Book Club, we are all about your body, your choice, because having hair is normal, like literally normal. If you want to get rid of your body hair, then do it. And if you don't, then whatever. So with that being said, let's get into sugar waxing. There are a long list of benefits to sugaring compared to like regular waxing or shaving, like being less painful and safer for sensitive skin. One thing that's really nice is that sugar melts at a lower temperature, so it's not as hot on your skin and doesn't damage it as much. Sugaring also removes the hair without attaching it to the live skin, so it only removes any dead skin and it removes hair directly from the root, so it can last a little bit longer than shaving. And shaving, speaking of which, actually can cause ingrown hairs, razor burn, and skin irritation, especially like on your armpits because your skin is more sensitive there. And once your hair follicle is damaged, it's really easy for germs to get inside of there, which can cause an infection, all those little like, you know, bumps and things that may not be necessarily a hallmark of a healthy skin. So sugar wax is super easy to use, can be good for your skin, and it only takes three ingredients to make it: sugar, water, and lemon. All three of them are non-toxic and compostable, non-expensive, and very accessible ingredients, which I love to see because sometimes the beauty industry loves to kind of use money as a means of just gatekeeping itself. So part of why sugar waxing has also gotten so popular is because it is so simple to make, because all you need is those three ingredients. The ratio is a cup of sugar, a fourth cup of water, and a fourth cup of lemon juice, scaled up or down depending on however much you're making. You stir them together, you bring it to a boil until it's like this golden brown, sticky goop, and you put it in a container to let it set. With one lump of wax, you should be able to get like around 6 to 8-ish wax strips. And the really nice thing is that, so the sugar paste should be applied in the opposite direction of your hair growth, and you can do this multiple times. Every piece of sugar wax can be reused 3 to 4 times, and once the piece isn't as stretchable, it's time to retire it because it'll just stop removing hair. This is really in contrast to like other types of wax where you have to throw it away after just one use, so like I said, a little bit more sustainable. So when you apply this sugar wax kind of in the opposite direction of your hair growth, it really allows the paste to be absorbed by the follicles and wrap around each and every hair shaft. And so when you remove it, you pull with like a snap of your wrist and you pull the paste in the natural direction of your hair growth. So two different directions there. So with this trend coming back, places have started to sell sugar wax products like mainstream stores like Target and Amazon and independent business owners on Etsy and TikTok. With everyone always trying to be on the latest trends, the nicest thing about this sugar waxing trend is that it actually works and it's relatively accessible. That's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you have a topic you'd like to discuss or a question you have for me, my DMs are open. You can find me on pretty much any platform, YouTube, Insta, Twitter, TikTok, at Notes by Neba. That's all for now, and I'll see you on the next page.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.